Welcome to episode 327 of After the Credits, and I am one of your co-hosts, Marina Antunes, joined today by fellow co-hosts.
We're doing this again. Bill Harris.
Melissa McDowell.
Oh, it's me. Chloe Stebbing.
And Steve Stebbing.
We have a special guest today. There was a lot of pauses.
I was told to go last.
Something wrong with the force today, man.
It is technically it is Thanksgiving, so thank you guys for taking the time from family commitments to record a show. It is very much appreciated, and as we mentioned off the top, we have a special guest today. Chloe, thank you so much for joining us.
Yes, for sure. Wouldn't miss it.
Your first appearance on the show, probably not the last, because we like to bring people in all the time, whenever we can. So today we're going to be talking about VIF, which wrapped a couple of weeks ago now. A week ago? I have lost track of time at this point, but VIF happened.
It's all a blur.
Well, for Bill, it really is a blur because your count of movies is kind of ridiculous for 10 days of movie watching.
Well, really, it's not. Like, usually I'd be, if it had been old VIF, I would have been 100 plus. And I only saw 42. So, and I'm festival strong. I'm feeling great, but... those playhouse seats destroyed my back. I'm sorry. They need to go.
Yeah. Even finding like my seats in the house where I can actually have good leg room and stuff. Yeah, it's still killer. There's not a lot of give to those seats whatsoever. And I mean, I warned Chloe up front. These seats aren't great.
It's pretty bad, especially especially when you do more than two movies in that space. One movie is actually painful enough, but two in a row is really, really hard.
It didn't help that I, like, 3 or 4 days, I was there from like 2 p.m. to like 11.
Yeah. Unpleasant.
Once I said on the last podcast, the VIF was brought to you by ibuprofen.
And the post-festival massage.
Yeah, which was great, by the way. Holy. I'm like, do your worst, dude. I am hurting.
What did you guys think of the festival overall?
I thought that for the movies that we picked, the success rate was higher. I mean, I think I only, at the end of my count, was 18. I think Chloe would be 15. I would say we were in the high 90 percentile of like actually taking in really good content. So, I was pretty happy with it because I'm usually, there are some complete duds, at least by like 3-4 days into the festival, you might've seen one, but, I feel like we're hitting bullseyes mostly.
How about you, Melissa?
Yeah, I saw 15 movies over the course of the festival. It felt short to me. Like, I kind of miss the old days when it went all the way through to the Thanksgiving weekend. This felt like a really truncated festival. I kind of understand why they've done like a shorter run. I felt like I was just getting into the groove and then it was like all over. But similarly to Steve, I feel like I didn't see anything terrible. Like, everything was decent. It's just like some of the stuff really, really did it for me, and other stuff I was like, oh, that's okay. That's a 3 all day, you know, kind of thing. I thought the programming was really good. There was a lot of stuff that I really wanted to see. Sometimes the timing was a bit weird. Like, there were days where there were a couple of days where I was like, oh, well, there's nothing that is really speaking to me on the program today. And then there were days where I was like, okay, there's 4 movies I'm going to book, and I would book another 3 if I could actually watch 2 things at the same time. But again, that's probably more about my personal taste than the programming. So,
how about you, Chloe?
I really enjoyed the festival. It was my first festival. I didn't have huge interest in a lot of the movies that were on the initial list. It was just a few, like, Can I Get a Witness and Presence for the most part, and a Different Man. But because of Steve, I got to see other ones like Secret Mall Apartment, which were like that. That one really surprised me because I was expecting it to be a pretty boring art documentary, and I'm not really one for boring art documentaries. But I really enjoyed that one, and just I think I've never seen that many movies in a day, really, like especially when we had to go see four of them. Like I've never watched movies back to back like that, so that was an experience. But it's definitely one that I'm looking forward to tackling again next year.
Can I say I miss the program? I used to love the paper program with, I know they still have the little like the short program, but I loved the book that you could buy for like $10 or whatever it was. And then you could like look at all the things and mark all the pages. I miss that part of the festival thing, but, I only because I found that was kind of how I discovered movies. I find it a lot harder to do with the online program. And getting the little paper program isn't always an easy thing because it's not really widely available unless you're downtown Vancouver. So it's always a little more difficult to kind of find undiscovered gems or things that, you know, might not always be immediately apparent as something that I'd want to see. So I find that I generally only stick to, you know, movies that I know about or movies that you guys recommend. So like I watched Seeds because it was on Melissa's list. And I think Chloe, it might have been on your list as well of things that you guys were interested in. Otherwise, I never would have found that movie anywhere on the program. Like I just would not have for it. So I find that like I'm thinking, have I missed something that would have been like really special? And so that's for me kind of a downer. But then I only also saw 10 movies at the festival itself, and out of everything that played, I'd seen two of them already. So I watched 12 movies out of like 300 and something, so I was never gonna get the full festival experience anyways. But I do miss the old days of working for 3 days to try to figure out what you're going to watch, because there was always the chance that you're going to find something really cool and really special in there. And like Melissa said, probably just for me personally, it was like a time crunch. I would have liked to see more stuff that like people were talking about in line. Like I had some great conversations with folks that were just talking about movies in line. And I'm like, oh, that sounds really cool. Am I going to get to see it? No, because I didn't even get to see everything that I actually put on my schedule. So that happened.
Yeah. Like we missed the last weekend too. So like we missed the end in Saturday Night and Emilia Perez and a lot of the bigger films for that second weekend. But
it's okay. You actually may have dodged a small bullet. So
a couple of those maybe. Yeah. I know Bill will disagree on at least one of them. But
ever.
Sorry.
I have to say that I was having a really good festival until it started getting really weird with tickets. They decided to change the rules at the Playhouse, and unless you were really smart about your schedule, there was a chance you might get shut out for more or less. They were penalizing you for watching movies, which was not cool. And
you're talking about the pass holder allotments, not tickets in general, because if you bought a ticket, you had a ticket. But
yeah, for sure. Yeah. But they made it really hard to get tickets at times. And I know that Steve ran into a problem where he legitimately didn't have a ticket.
Yeah. I had one ticket that I had purchased personally for Conclave, but it was that like Chloe did not have a ticket. So it was like, we were going to miss that movie. So if Bill and Mark hadn't stepped in, and had a ticket, we wouldn't have seen that film.
What I think is disappointing is that if you're going to have a rule, it should be across the entire thing, not venue manager to venue manager. Cause it seemed like it depended a lot on who was working who was managing the venue, and they had different rules as to how they operated it, which is kind of a bummer. Like if you're going to do that for the entire festival, so people know what to expect, because otherwise it just turns into a big nightmare.
Well, and if we're, airing grievances about the festival, Another thing about tickets, and this one's just like super small and super like just like a, on a nerdy like memory keeping sense, but usually we're always able to keep those tickets that were given for each movie that identify each movie. And some were taking them, some weren't even giving you a ticket. They were giving you this weird raffle ticket and stuff. And it was so wildly inconsistent that like even for like Chloe's first festival, it can't even make like a shadow box thing out of it with all the tickets. It's because we don't have all the tickets. So that's just on like a super nerdy level that just kind of annoyed me and pissed me off.
I was doing photos on Twitter of my ticket stubs, and a couple times I didn't get ticket stubs, and I just like lost my OCD mind and had to find the and found the venue manager. I'm like, can I take a picture of a ticket? And they're like, what? And I'm like, can I take a picture of a ticket? Yeah.
And they're probably like, here comes that crazy guy.
Yeah, totally. Well, half them know I'm already crazy, so it's fine. So
just keeping up with the status quo of it.
Yeah, pretty much.
But you know that things are bad in International Village when I had three different people tell me how bad it was trying to get tickets there.
Luckily, we only had one movie there, but it was the movie to kick it off. So it wasn't like setting up the greatest organizational template for Chloe to see for the first screening in. I'm like, yeah, they're confused. This whole thing's confused.
It doesn't get better there, though. It never gets better in International Village.
The worst part of International, I got there the first day at like 3 o'clock. The first movie was at 3:45 and there was nobody there. And when they finally arrived,
at all though.
No,
because it's International Village.
There was nothing as well, there.
And it's a drug front mall. Chloe had never been there before either.
Oh my god.
No.
Yeah, they sell cocaine downstairs. I'm sure of it. <That's plain laughs>
No, hey, let's not speculate.
It's a cafe and shoe stores, you guys. And right. Phone unlocking. Like it's totally legit.
The cat cafe is totally legit. They have cats.
Yes. So, you know. And then there's so many mobile stores. So many.
Shoe stores are awesome. I'll put in a pitch for the women who run those shoe stores.
I'm with you.
I've bought many a pair of shoes in that mall.
See? It's legit, man. It's legit.
Wow.
All right.
I'm proven wrong on that one.
There's an article somewhere about that mall and how it's...
Recently.
The issue with how that mall was marketed, but it is what it is. Okay, so now that we've talked a little bit about the general experience with the festival, let's talk about some movies. And of course, Bill breaks the rules and does a top 10, but that's okay.
I'll do the other five after. It's fine.
Yeah. No. So we're gonna do a countdown to five, and because I only watched 10, I think I'm only gonna do a top three. I looked at the rest of the list. I'm like, that's not really fair. So I'll just give you my top three favorites. So I'll jump in at number three, but let's start with number five. I don't know who wants to go first.
I'll go first.
Sure.
And I think because of the buzz, I don't know why I heard such middle buzz on this movie, but it turned out to be really cool and inventive. And it's Steven Soderbergh's presence. This movie was fun. It just the way it flowed. Its perspective is so unique. And I didn't really see that twist coming. I thought it was really like a really, really solid twist, and the exposition's done in such a great way. And I kind of loved that dad. I thought he was great. It just gives you a lot to think about. So that would definitely be my number five for the festival.
I'll jump in only to say that it's my number three. Out of the 10 movies that I watched, I really liked this. I know that there were a lot of mixed reviews coming out of the festival, but I thought with you, Steve, I think it's really inventive. It's a really unique way to tell stories. I like how the truncated storytelling aspect of it, where you only get like bits and pieces, but it's still enough to make sense of what's going on in this family that's in grief. I really enjoyed it. There are some like little tidbits that are kind of weird, and some of the dialogue is so bad. Teenage boys, I'm sure, do not talk like that. It was kind of distracting in that final scene. But overall, I thought I really enjoyed this. I like Steven Soderbergh in play mode, and this is definitely him.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And I thought experimenting. It went quite well. Yeah. Yeah.
Just playing with stuff and seeing what it does.
Agreed.
I think it's like my number 39 of the festival, but we can't win them all.
I know, right? Talk about taking us down a peg.
Let's put it in perspective here. You said you've seen in the high 40s, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
But goddamn, that was really low down on your list.
Snap.
Holy crap.
So which Paranormal Activity movie is that? Number 7? Aww, number 8?
I feel like it's different than that one.
I can't even pick a side because I missed that one at the festival. So I'm going to have to wait. See who's right.
Well, I think Dan gave it a 3 out of 5. So that's Dan's, number.
The Dan sign of approval, the coveted thing on that's the okay.
It's podcast. It's a passing grade. So
yeah, hey. It's not a 2.5. It's a 3.
No, it's a 3. Chloe, what's your number 5?
That would be Conclave, the Popacy Ascension. I don't know the dialogue for what that's called. The election for the Popacy. This was not on my radar at all. Steve took me to see this one because it was on his list, and I was very pleasantly surprised. I really loved the color palette, and Ralph Fiennes is great in it. Stanley Tucci is amazing in it. I don't remember the director. Steve can probably fill me in there.
Yeah, Edward Berger.
Right. And just like the parallels between like the old world traditions of the Vatican and the Catholic Church versus the modern aspects, like they all have iPhones and vapes and all that shit. So I don't know, like it was a really surprising film for me, and for a lot of reasons and in a lot of ways.
You guys are killing me, man. This is my number 2. Talk about throwing in a wrench. I love this movie. For all the reasons that Chloe says, particularly that mix of tradition and modernity, how those two things come together in this clash of this really ancient thing that doesn't even really make a lot of sense. I mean, I don't know. This whole religious thing is weird to begin with, but there's just something really cool about the way that Berger visualizes the way that this election comes to be. It's not the first time we've seen a movie about the election of a pope. I think there's been at least another one. And there may have even been a Dan Brown adaptation about this. I just get the sense I've seen something like this before, but never on this level. I mean, if Ralph Fiennes doesn't get an Oscar this time around, they've clearly blackballed him. I just don't understand why he doesn't have one at this point already. And the movie is just, I thought it was fantastic. I thought the tension was really great. There were a lot of unexpected moments. There was a lot of moments like, aha, I saw that coming, but never quite in the way that you sort of expect. I thought it was fantastic. My number 2. I'm not going to have anything to talk about at the end of the show. Bill, what's your number 5?
Conclave is later on my list. I'll talk about it then.
Okay.
Number 5 is a Japanese film called Happy End. This little Japanese film that came out of nowhere, and I just really loved it, by a director named Neo Sara. It's about these this gang of students at this school who pull this like massive prank on the principal. They put his car upside down, and it's like his most prized possession. And they come to school, and the principal loses his mind and puts a surveillance system in the school, and it's the students against the surveillance system. It's really fun, and it came out of nowhere, and that's what I love about this festival. Like last year it was like Red Rooms. This is my Red Rooms film of the year, Happy End. Something that just came out of the blue and smacked me in the face and said, you're awesome. So I have no idea if anybody's gonna have a chance to see it. It's this little Japanese film, but I love the hell out of it.
And of course, nobody has it, right? Nobody has distro rights on it.
No,
of course.
Thank you, Viff.
Yeah.
And Melissa, you're number five.
My number five was Frowaka, which is an Irish kind of horror film, folk horror film. Really interesting mix of things. So feminist folk horror, and also really plays around with that. Like, I love it when movies do that thing where, is it mental illness or is it supernatural? Is it mental illness or is it supernatural? Mm-hmm. That for me is like one of my favorite tropes in horror. And this one does it really well. So yeah, I thought this was super cool. It made me want to learn a bit more about like, about some of the like Irish folk traditions. Cause there's these people like the Straw Boys, which apparently is a thing. These dudes show up to your wedding wearing like a conical hat made out of straw that covers their face. And they like steal a dance with the bride and supposedly bring good luck to your nuptials and all this stuff. But in the meantime, they look super creepy. And when you see them, you can't help but think of oh crap. What's
the Wicker Man?
Wicker Man, thank you.
I was gonna say Kill List by Ben Wheatley.
Yes, both. Yeah. Both. And that's probably where that came from in Kill List too. Mm-hmm. It was a nice little surprise. VIFF is always about like, I always love looking at the Altered States programming first. Mm-hmm. That's kind of, like, always where I start. And this one looked promising. Cause yeah, you never really know with Altered States if you're gonna like fall in love or be horrifically disappointed. but this one was definitely a good one. And I have no idea what's happening with it in terms of distribution or where people will get to see it. But if you get a chance to see Frowaka, you should take it.
Yeah, it was on my list. I just skipped out on it on the last day, to go hang out on my last night in the city. So I'm definitely gonna be looking for that one to watch, because yeah, it looked, the stills for it looked really good. So
mm-hmm. yeah it's beautifully shot, really well acted, and yeah, it's just a cool little horror flick.
Awesome. Steve, what's your number four?
My number four, and I saw it after a lot of people, I guess. And so my expectations for this film were set up to be lower. But my number four of the festival is A Different Man, with Sebastian Stan and Adam Pearson and Renat Rensvi from Worst Person in the World, who I adore in a frustrated way in the film. Her character is so frustrating, but I really like her. And Sebastian Stan gives, I think, the performance of his career in this film. Like, it's my favorite performance he's ever given. And Adam Pearson is incredible. But there's a point in this movie where one of the characters says that Sebastian Stan's character reminds him of Woody Allen. And then the movie for me plays like a dark comedy Woody Allen film from then on out, with some body horror mixed into it. And I was just absolutely delighted by it. It goes in directions that I didn't see coming, especially in the third act. And the out on the film is fucking hilarious. So I really dug A Different Man. And I'm looking forward to more from this filmmaker. The quote unquote transformation scene in this is so fucking bold and such a, I mean, it's well done. I really loved it.
This film has maybe one of my favorite scenes of the year, the karaoke scene.
Yes. Incredible scene.
So good. He's such a great singer. And it's mm-hmm. so unexpected, and it just kills. It's such a great scene. I think the thing people are going to say about this film is you're really going to like the third act or you're not.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't. I didn't think it quite worked. But I love the rest of the film. The acting is incredible, and I still was happy I saw it. And Renate Renesve is incredible. That's all I'm gonna say.
Chloe, what's your number four?
actually the same as Steve's, a different man. I loved Sebastian Stan in this. I completely forgot that he existed. And then after this movie, I was like, why is that guy so familiar? And then I realized that he's Bucky from Winter Soldier. And I'm like, wow, I'm really that stupid, huh? this, like, I saw the trailer for this movie when I went and saw Strange Darling in theaters. And since then, I was super, super excited for it. So I'm really glad that I got to see it during the festival. And I was just blown away by it. The body horror element in it took me completely by surprise, and I loved every second of it. I'm a huge body horror gore person, and to find that in this film, I was like, oh my god. And the dark comedy just hits so well for me. I've been recommending this movie to every person that I talk to, and I'm really excited to be able to watch it again.
Bill, you're number four.
I think I'm the only one that saw this one, so I'm going to tell everybody to see this right away if you can. My number four is The Girl with the Needle. Holy shit, this one kicked my ass. It's shot in high contrast, black and white. And the VIF book tells you an approximate of what the film is. It says it's a film about a serial killer, but does not tell you what the serial killer is. And holy shit, that is a kick in the face. A kick in the face. This movie rules. It's hard to watch. And everybody I know said that this movie like hurt them. And I'm like, yeah, that's awesome.
I went looking, as soon as you told me about this thing, I went looking for a trailer. There isn't one out there, but there is a scene. I'm like, how is this what Bill told me about? Like, I'm very confused and now even more interested to see it.
Every single person I talked to at the festival that saw this movie, maybe except for you, Bill, all said, this is, you'll watch this one time and then you'll want to scrub your brain and never think about it ever, ever again.
That's awesome.
So is this the zone of interest of 2024?
No, different.
Okay.
Different. But okay. More like the Amour of this festival, the Haneke film.
Well,
like,
two people I talked to said for them it was a similar emotional experience to watching Zone of Interest.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Okay. Or is it like Son of Saul? Side of it.
Yeah.
Son of Saul is just so the movie carries you on the dude's back, so it is so much more in depth. It's like there's a difference to it, so I'm wondering if it's on that like kind of visceral level where you're just like a Zone of Interest. I felt like I said on the show, I felt like that movie burnt to my bones. Like it was
It was
an experience.
The thing about this film is it sets you up and then it knocks you down.
Oh,
and yeah, and it's really harsh. But I kind of like that. I think it's bold filmmaking. Everybody bitches about Megalopolis, but at least he tried something. They're trying something here. And I like that they try stuff, and I have no problem rewarding people for trying stuff. So this movie rules. I don't care what anybody else says. It's harsh, but I like to watch harsh films. Yeah.
Now it's on my list.
Yeah, every single person I talked to said it was good. They just said that for them it was like Zone of Interest or Requiem for a Dream, which is
you watch once.
You really only need to watch it one time and you can appreciate the brilliance of it, but you probably don't want to sit through it again. So
yeah. Melissa, what's your number four?
My number four, and there'll probably be some maybe disagreement about where this lands for people, is that I loved Matt and Mara a lot. That's the new, I always screw up his name, Kazik Radwanski, writer-director, starring Dara Campbell and everyone's favorite Matt Johnson. the reason I love this movie is because we're meeting this woman who's in her probably like mid to late 30s, at a certain point in her life where she's been married for 7 years. She has a small kid. She's a professor and she's an English professor and is having difficulty in her career, is feeling a bit like creatively stalled. And then this guy that she did grad school with kind of comes back into her life, and they have this sort of weird electric chemistry, and they both want to be around each other. And I don't know, like, to me, it just felt like 7 Year Itch for grownups, like a serious version of 7 Year Itch for grownups. And I thought it was really like, it's a slow movie. It's a character study. It's a slow movie. It's a slice of life movie, which is not for everyone. I know that, but I really liked it a lot. And I love the chemistry between Dara and Matt. I just think watching them together is really compelling. I thought that when I saw them together in Kazakh's last film, which was at 13,000 feet, which was also brilliant. They had a really short scene in that film together. And then this one is just basically the two of them on screen for an hour and a half. And yeah, I dug it. It's probably not going to be everyone's cup of tea, but if you're into slice of life movies, if quiet and introspective can work for you on any given day, then this is a good movie for you.
Yeah. I saw this one too. I got the screener for it, and, I like how the performances feel like effortless. And like you said, there's a chemistry, a palpable chemistry between Dara Campbell and Matt Johnson. And Matt Johnson has effortless charm. I always enjoy him. Slight little character study, but definitely one that I enjoyed.
I actually thought that Matt Johnson's embodiment of this character is so relatable in the way that he's kind of like this self-absorbed but really nice guy. Like, you can tell he's like a guy that everybody likes, but he's also like the self-absorbed kind of dude that just is kind of clueless to what's going on in other people's lives. So he kind of like comes into this rekindling relationship, not even like really realizing what he's doing to her. And that's the part that I thought was like the most interesting. I actually thought this was really good. I'm with you, Melissa. I really, really enjoyed this. Something about it didn't fully work for me, but it might have been the fact that he just kind of comes across as this dickish character. And that's great. I mean, the movie is kind of like, I like how it's playing with these two individuals at this very specific point in time. And it's really about her, not so much about him, but he kind of just put me off. Like, maybe because I've met people like that before, and they just kind of rubbed me the wrong way. I'm like, here's another asshole coming in and disrupting everybody's life. And then just like walking away when things don't work out the way he wants them to. And that kind of just really kind of nagged at me. So I guess it did what it was supposed to.
See, I don't know though. Like, I do kind of like, there's another way to read his behavior, which is that he could see that it wasn't going to go anywhere. So he torpedoed it. Is part of it. And then the other thing I think is like, she's not perfect either. No. Like, that whole conversation, like, she's married to a musician and having a dinner party with all of his musician friends and starts talking about how she doesn't like music. And it's like, and then complains to her husband afterwards about their reaction to her saying that. And it's like, oh man, like, you need some self-awareness.
Well, that's what felt so real about it. It's kind of like very passive aggressive in this sort of way that, you know, relationships can be after you've been together with somebody for a long time. Like, sometimes you just want to stir the pot, to be totally frank. And that kind of felt really relatable. I think I might have liked this movie more now that I'm talking about it.
It's really interesting. It really does feel like you're just watching two real people in the world.
Yeah. Agreed.
And all the like really tight close-ups on them are great, I think. They're both really like Dara Campbell, I think, is just a master of telegraphing what she's thinking in her face without dialogue. I thought it's a cool movie. I think Kazakh is a really interesting filmmaker. I'm not, now he's, for me, he's two for two, and I'm willing to watch whatever he puts out.
Awesome.
I think it's about number 35 on my list, but don't worry. But don't worry, friends. I have a Canadian film on my list because I love Canadian film now. Did you guys hear about this last podcast?
Oh, no.
I love Canadian film.
He's a convert.
I am the champion.
We're winning you over.
So I am the champion of Canadian film now.
Steve, boy. What's your number three?
My number three, and you know, I kind of felt like it might be in my top five in just the planning stage. And not because my last experience with one of their films at this festival landed high on my list, because the last time I saw an Andrea Arnold film at VIFF was American Honey. And I felt, while I enjoyed good portions of the film, I thought it was very bloated. And it led to me kind of tanking the review on it a bit, because I just felt like a lot of it was unnecessary. But Bird, on the other hand, is such a damn good movie. I was so into this movie for the entire duration. The lead actress in it, I'm spacing on her name right now. She is really, really, really good and anchors the story so well. And then playing her dad is Barry Keoghan. In just another just brilliantly nuanced role as the young bug who's getting married to a new girl, and which kind of kicks off the whole story. But I think the heart of this film is the titular character, is Fran Rogowski in this movie, who just does such a brilliant job. He is so interesting to watch on screen at all times. Definitely one of my favorite actors currently. And there's a point of this film, without even getting into spoilers, where I was just saying in my mind, is she going for this? Is she actually going to go for this? And she pulls the trigger on something that I didn't think she was going to do. And I thought it was really rewarding.
You've seen enough Andrea really rewarding movies to know that she's always going to pull the trigger.
No, this is different.
This one is different. This one's different as far as her films go. And I know, like, pulling the trigger is big words when it comes to Andrea Arnold, especially if you've seen the documentary Cow. but this one's in a very different way. In a very different way. And it seriously got me right in the heart. And I enjoyed the hell out of Bird.
It's higher on my list.
Oh, shit. Nice. Nice. I like that. I like that a lot.
Yeah.
Chloe, what's your number three?
My number three is Brief History of a Family. This is a Chinese film directed by Jianji Jin, I think is the name of the director, if I'm recalling correctly. Very focused family drama that takes place after the abolishment of the one-child policy in China. A boy brings home another boy from school, and his parents get really attached to this other kid and kind of start bringing him into the family more. And it causes problems between the boy and his parents. And it's just it's very beautifully shot. A lot of camera shots that are very symbolic. And I tend to like that in films. I like symbolism. I like anecdotes, analogies, all that stuff. And it's very trying to find the words to explain. It's very sad in ways, and the sense of paranoia that kind of permeates the entire film is extremely intriguing, and it's hard to kind of discern like what's actually going on and whose intentions are what. And I really like this film, and I actually do want to see more from this director.
Nice. One I hadn't even heard of. So, hey, something else to add to the watch list.
It was honestly, it was one that was on Chloe's list when we were putting our schedule together. So it wasn't one that even was in my radar at all. But yeah, I'm with Chloe. I mean, it's one of the most gorgeous films of the festival, and a couple really, really, really strong performances. And it's a movie that we had to book it for because we had watched Secret Mall Apartment at International Village, and then this one was at Fifth Avenue, so we had to book it across town to get there in time. And we got there with 2 minutes to spare and sat the front row, so we had good subtitle like nice. a good vision for subtitles.
I love it. Bill, what's your number three?
I'm the first person that's going to be talking about Anora, I'm guessing. It's
higher.
Yeah, sorry. I think it's a worthy Palme d'Or winner. It was a lot funnier than I thought it would be. Then it got super serious at times, and I kind of like that. But I think it's the Mikey Madison show. She's incredible. I think she's going to win the Oscar. But I think the real surprise is Yuri Borisov, who plays like a thug kind of hitman guy who just classes the place up every time he's on the screen. He's incredible. I hope that this is Sean Baker's breakout film. I hope this film makes money. Most of his films don't really get seen, but I think this one's great. I think it's going to be a 10 Oscar nomination kind of movie.
I hope it is. It's certainly deserving. I liked it a lot too. But I've been on the Sean Baker bandwagon for so long at this point. It just feels like old news when he has another movie. It's like, yes, another thing to watch. Yes, everybody should watch his other movies. I like that this is a little more not mainstream, but it feels more sort of like approachable, because it is a bit lighter in tone. It's a lot funnier than I think I expected even. But yeah, I really like the second half of this movie, I think, is really, really fantastic. And like you say, Bill, Yuri was the standout for me. I'm like, who is this guy? I think I've seen him in something before. I don't actually think I have, but wow, fantastic. All around, I thought this was great. I would be shocked if Madison won the Oscar, though. I think that's a little bit of a long shot, but I would love to see it. I would love to see it for sure. Where are we? Melissa, you're number three.
My number three was also Bird. I agree with Steve's placement of this on the list, but disagree with his assessment of American Honey, because I loved American Honey.
There's a lot I do love about that movie. I just on the record, I just felt it's a little bit bloated.
Fair. What I love about Andrea Arnold films, like to a rule, is the compassion and empathy that she has for her characters. Like, there isn't black and white in these films. There isn't judgment of people. Like, maybe there is of one particular character, but he really deserves it. but in terms of how she presents people who are kind of living on the margins, living sort of hand to mouth poverty existences, she tells these stories in a really compassionate way, where they're complete human beings with, you know, lots of great facets to their character, along with any perceived flaws. So I just really appreciate the compassion that she brings to these stories. And I too am on the Franz Rogowski bandwagon. Like, I just think he's so brilliant. And if you look at like this performance versus Passages, I mean, they're so night and day, like just in terms of the character. Like, what is so interesting to me about this film is that here you have a grown man who befriends a teenage girl. And at all stages of this, it could have felt icky and weird and off-putting, and it never does. And it never does because of the way that Franz, you know, portrays this character and presents this person. Like, you never at any stage do you kind of question his intentions with this girl. Like, it feels pure and honorable and like a friendship between an adult and a teenage girl. And I really appreciated that. I don't think it's a thing that we see on screen very often, that kind of like platonic relationship between an adult man and a teenage girl. And I just really, that was very refreshing and really nice to see on screen. So Andrea Arnold fangirl for life. I'm here for all of it. And this was brilliant. And yeah, it's, I mean, I don't think it's super spoilery to say that this takes a little turn into magical realism. And that's not going to work for some people, I think, but it did very much work for me. I think it's earned. Like, I don't think it kind of comes out of nowhere. I think it's very earned. And I think that you want something good and magical to happen to this girl.
Yeah.
You just do. It's brilliant. It's really great. I think people should see it.
I'm even more upset that I missed this now. Palmer. Steve, you're number two.
My number two, and this is the wrestling match of Viv, is my number one and my number two, which were just so nose to nose to the finish line. And I finally just landed on that it would be the animated film Flow, which was a film that was a conduit right to my heart. And I had no idea how much it would be until it really gets going and gets into some of the symbolism of its third act, and then it really starts bringing it home. And by the credits, I was just stunned. You know, like this movie made me weak in the knees. Like, it really did. Like, I was really taken aback by it. I think it's honestly one of the coolest animation experiences that I've gone through in theaters. And when you look it up on like Letterboxd and stuff, people basically are like calling it PlayStation 2 graphics and everything, but that's not where the substance lies in this story. And there's unbelievable character building depth to this film that I'm still floored at how it was possible. So, I'm not going to spoil Bill's thoughts on it, but I Chloe and I saw him directly after the screening, and I think we both kind of felt the same about it. So just an absolutely incredible piece of animation for sure.
Higher on my list.
Holy shit. Chloe, what's your number two?
My number two is also Flow. I agree with everything that Steve said. It was extremely emotional, extremely symbolic. And unfortunately, like Steve said, people are hating on it because of the graphics, because there's no dialogue. And so, unfortunately, I don't think that this is going to reach a super wide audience, but I really wish it would, because it has a very strong message and it has a very powerful message. But yeah, probably a lot of people aren't going to see this one, but I was bawling my eyes out after this. But that's not anything new. And yeah, like it's just an extremely powerful emotional piece. And I am urging people to, well, hopefully it comes out in a larger release in some sort of physical or streaming or something, because I want to show people this and I want to harvest their tears from it.
Criterion has it.
Yeah. I also just want to say how lovely it is. Like, for those of you listening at home, you can't see this, but Chloe's cat is sitting like just on the side of her screen, listening and nodding along to all of her.
So I expect this will not be the Robot Dreams of this year, because I think Janus/Criterion that does actually have a release plan in place.
I hope so, because it could go for the best feature, animated feature. I think it has that within it.
It is also Latvia's nominee Oscar. for Oscar,
which is bizarre because there is no dialogue. So yeah. I'm not sure how it skirted that rule, but there we go. I will just say, well, no, I'll say that when Bill talks about it, because it's still higher on his list. Melissa, what's your number two?
My number two is Bird. We've already talked a lot about this, so I'm just
gonna say, I just realized what your number one movie is, and I'm floored.
Nice. I'm also I'm with Steve on American Honey. Just thought I'd point that out. Yeah, this is great.
You're both wrong. That's all.
The scene with Shia in the Walmart on the counter, that's great. Rest of the movie kind of blows. This was a shock. I didn't think she had this in her, I'll tell you the truth. And the person beside me didn't like the ending at all. And I just want to be like, what were you expecting? Like, I thought the buildup was there. I thought it was earned. As Steve said, I thought it was earned. It just constantly amazes me how she finds actresses who have never acted before and just destroy every movie. Kate Jarvis in Fish Tank, amazing. It just keeps on happening. This comes out next, like 2 weeks from now, 3 weeks from now. So everybody's
gonna okay, cool. To see it. Cool.
So it's incredible. Definitely a must see.
That's amazing. Melissa, you're number two.
My number two was Secret Mall Apartment.
Nice. Nice.
Yeah, I think most of us are all, did you see this too, Marina? Or was it just the?
No, I missed it.
Sometimes movies find you when you need them. And there was just something about this day was, I had a really frustrating day at work and I was just kind of like feeling a little angry at the world. And I dragged myself to the theater anyway, because I had the ticket for the movie, and it completely transformed my mood. There's just, this film is really hopeful. It's really positive. It's really about how people can, like, sort of how you can express opposition to horrible things that are happening in the world, like gentrification, in small ways, but that resistance matters, and that those stories matter, and they really help to uplift people. And just getting introduced to Michael Townsend as an artist was also really interesting, because in addition to, so for folks who don't know much about this story, so the Secret Mall Apartment was in Rhode Island, Providence, Rhode Island. They sort of tore down this whole area that had been home to artist studios and built a gigantic shopping mall in its place. And so a group of artists kind of started investigating the mall and discovered this weird little area that wasn't being used and turned it into an apartment. And they had access to it for like 4 years before they finally got caught. And so the whole time, like, you're just watching, they quite brilliantly filmed everything. So they were using this historic footage of them setting up the mall apartment, and you're just cheering, like, every single time they like bring a couch upstairs into this weird hidden corner of the mall and don't get caught. You're cheering for that. There's like a scene where they're like bringing all these cinder blocks in that they've purchased from Home Depot, and security actually stops them. But because they're all nice looking young white people, they get away with it, and they continue the mall apartment for another 2 years after that. Like, it's all of it is kind of, it's a really great sort of fuck you to the man kind of movie that is pretty uplifting. And then Michael Townsend, like, all of his art has a really sort of public focus, and it's always like hopeful and optimistic messaging. So he's done this thing. He's been involved with this project at a children's hospital in Rhode Island for 15 years, where he goes in with a team of young artists and they do these like masking tape murals on the bedroom walls of the child patients. And, you know, like everything that he does just felt really lovely and inspiring to me. And it was just such a nice turnaround to my day. And it's a really terrific documentary. It's a really interesting story. It's something that actually makes you feel good, which at a film festival, hard to come by sometimes. So yeah, if you can track down this film, I have no idea what's going to happen with it, but it's a really lovely story and deserves to be seen by more people.
It doesn't even really have a movie poster. If you look it up on like doing my review for it on Letterboxd, I'm like, it's just like a picture of them from the video inside the Secret Mall Apartment. This is one of the surprises of the festival for me. Like, this and Flow are like those, like, I didn't realize it was going to be that good. Like, it's, and yeah, there's so many themes at play in this movie, which I find really interesting.
Yeah, I hope that it does get some sort of distribution. It's been picking up a lot of steam at festivals. There's quite a bit of buzz, so hopefully it will get picked up somewhere along the line. My number two was Conclave, which we already talked about. It's great. I don't have anything new to add. Steve, what's your number one?
My number one of the festival is Sean Baker's Inara. I have to agree on all levels that this feels like a new gear in Sean Baker's career, where he's making movies that are a bit more accessible, but accessible still in his voice. He doesn't feel like he had to adjust himself at all to be more direct. This still is very much a Sean Baker movie at its core, and Mikey Madison is the performance to beat this year. She is absolutely incredible, and the pulse of which this movie moves at is so great. I mean, it clears the 2-hour bar, but never feels like it's overstaying its welcome. It's so well paced. There's no filler to this film, and so much going on in that final scene. It bowls you over in the last moment. And hey, we got a tattoo in a movie again. all the things she said in a movie. That's great. And I don't know, the way that Sean Baker shows excess is so fascinating. I just love how he films that. This is one of the best moves of the year. It's not my favorite move of the year, but it is clearly one of the best moves of the year. So it's hard to top in this first category, but Flo was real close.
I think Bill may have mentioned this at some point in some discussion about Inara, but one of the things that came up in the discussion was that final scene and how good that final scene is, but also how funny this is in a different way from Sean mm-hmm. Baker's other movies. Like, it's almost like purposely funny. Like, Red Rocket was really funny too, but it was more funny because the character was funny. But this feels like it's funny because it's written that way.
Honestly, the baptism scene might be one of the funniest films, the funniest scenes in the last 20 years.
I agree. And the fact that he actually walks away from it at the end, I'm like, you did that?
I like choke howled when he was like, no. Like, I fucking died. It's so funny.
So many amazing scenes in that movie. Yeah.
So good. So yeah. Good.
But this is also my number one. So
yeah. That's amazing. That's amazing. And I think the word that I was looking for that I couldn't come to was accessible. It really does feel like the most accessible of Sean Baker's movies for mm-hmm. sure. For mm-hmm. sure. Not my favorite of his movies, but definitely up there. Chloe, what's your number one?
This one is, I think, largely personal. It's not super based on like how the movie is composed or the acting, but it is Can I Get a Witness? The idea of death, and specifically accepting death, has always been very emotional for me. It's always been a very strong topic for me. And then also the themes of climate change and what lengths we would go to prevent that or mitigate it. And I don't know, like it's a very, I think, topical and interesting view on how we would tackle climate change and those types of things. And it goes so drastic that it really calls to me in the sense of like it is extremely dramatic in that sense, and it goes extremely far in that direction. And I always like seeing things that are done super extra and super like, let's go to the like complete end of the possible spectrum. It took me a while to recover after this film. I was still crying until the next day, really. Like, I couldn't think about it, otherwise I would just break down. This is another film that I want to show people, and I want to see how their empathy works through this. Yeah. And I was kind of surprised by this film. Like, I knew that it was going to be really interesting and that it was probably going to be really good, but I didn't expect it to be so impactful. And I'm always a sucker for Sandra Oh. So that was just another part of like, hey, I have to see this one. But yeah.
Oh, no, I'm really bummed I missed this one. I really like Anne-Marie Fleming. I think she's a great filmmaker. So it's great to hear that this one is really good, too. Something else I need to catch up with.
Yeah, the concept of this film is so great. And I love that she drops you into the middle of this world and you don't quite know what's going on. Like, it takes a while for it to sort of unfold for you. Like, you have your suspicions, but it doesn't get confirmed until partway through the film, which I think is really effective. And I think it asks some really interesting questions, not just about like what are the lengths that we would go to mitigate climate change, but also, you know, if you do these big drastic things, do they continue to make sense for generations coming down the road too? Like, at what point does the sacrifice have to end? I think that's a really interesting question. Like, I think this is it's quite a thought provoking film that Anne-Marie's put together. It's really cool. I'm glad it's on your list, Chloe.
And I'm really sorry, guys. I can only do the podcast for 2 more years. My EOD date is coming up, and we're gonna have to quit in 2 years.
But it's gonna be a hell of a party, though, right? It's gonna be like seaside, like on a beach. Yeah, we can go on a canoe together.
Deftones, Deftones are going to play my party. It's going to be sweet.
Yes, I love it. Actually, no, your end of life party is going to be a banger, Bill. So I'm actually looking forward to it. Isn't that weird?
And Bill, shock the universe with your number one movie, of all things.
I love animated films. What are you talking about? Flow is my number one film. I think it might be one of the greatest animated films I've ever seen. I was also a complete mess after this film. Anybody who says this thing has PlayStation 2 graphics needs to be slapped. I thought it looked more like a rotoscoped film, which I thought was very cool. I've watched it again since. It's just as good, if not better. It's incredible. Gintz is on the level right now, I think, of like a Miyazaki. I think his last film was great. This is great. This one's better. And, other than the fact that The Wild Robot is also really freaking good, this probably should win the animated Oscar, but it won't, unfortunately.
No, so, Wild Robot will win it.
Yeah.
I think at this point, it's pretty much.
Let's say Disney hasn't released Moana 2, which I don't think is going to be
I don't great. See that one.
However, Disney also has a shit ton of money and a lot of pull. So I'm hoping that's not the way it's going to go. But, you know, reading the room, it's hard to tell. It's hard to tell at this point.
Yeah. A buddy of mine showed this to his like 5-year-old kid. And the kid was like the most interested he said he's seen in a movie in a very long time. But the movie just flows. You see what I did there?
Hey,
it's
the motion in that movie, like the actual adventure
is awesome
to that film. Like, really, it really is immersive. It really does feel fast and gripping. So
And I'm a cat person, so there you go. I think Marina, you saw this before the festival, right?
No, I haven't actually seen this yet.
You haven't seen it? Okay, well.
Well, no, I was completely 100% sure I was going to get this for Spark. Like, I was convinced. Like, we have history with Gintz. It was going to happen. So, yeah. He goes to show me. I know nothing.
Well, so. you got the other big one, so that's all that matters.
Yeah, it still doesn't soften the blow, man. Let me tell you, it doesn't matter how many Canadian premieres we have. It does not soften the blow that I didn't get Flow.
Nice.
Because that was the movie I was certain I was going to get. But it is what it is. I mean, Gintz is a fantastic filmmaker. And to speak with him is kind of amazing because he's this, like, just a lovely human being, and he's so soft-spoken. You kind of see in his eyes, like, just the passion that he has for filmmaking. And I mean, this is still not, this is not as one-man-ish as Away was, where he really did do everything on that film. This he still did a lot, but he wasn't working completely on his own. But you can see his fingertips all over it. I mean, he's a really, really, really interesting human being and a really great filmmaker. And I'm glad to see that, you know, folks are finally going to get to experience some of his storytelling, because he's a very interesting filmmaker for sure. And this is like the equivalent of Robot Dreams from last year. Like the only difference here is that this has a distributor that is probably going to do something with it. At least I hope so. So folks will get to see it, because it would be a real shame if this got buried like Robot Dreams did. I'm still bitter about that. Can you tell?
Yeah, I literally talked about that on Chloe and I's show like this week.
I have news about Robot Dreams after the fact, but I'll tell you.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
it has a Blu-ray.
Yeah, it just came out last week. Yeah,
I bought it.
Yeah. Oh, nice. Yeah. And it's just bare bones, right? It's like a deck color ring, so it's just like a bronze one. But like,
I don't care.
Talk about like the biggest opportunity dropped.
Yeah.
So sad. So sad.
Melissa, I think we've already, I think your number one is also Anora, right?
My number one is also Anora. And I just wanted to say, like, yeah, I did appreciate the comedy in this film, but I also worry about it being marketed that way, because there is a fairly abrupt tonal shift at a certain point in this film. And just from the conversations I had with people, like directly after the movie, people weren't quite sure where they landed. Like, they had to walk away for a bit and think about the film and decide if they liked it or not. For me, I knew that I loved it right away, and the tonal shift worked for me. But it is something that can confuse an audience. And I think especially the marketing campaign for this movie seems to be marketing it fairly heavily as a comedy. And I would just caution folks going into it that that's not entirely what you're going to get. Like, yes, there's some really funny pieces in here, because there's some really wackadoodle characters. But at the heart of the film, there's something more here that's happening here. And I think what I really loved about this movie is that, again, it's kind of like it plays around a lot with the sort of hooker with a heart of gold, pretty woman trope, that this girl's going to find her prince charming and it's going to change her situation. And does it? You'll have to watch the movie to find out. But like, I do think that it kind of plays around with some of that, with some of those politics, and the sort of myth making that we have in a capitalist society about how your fortunes could turn on a dime. Like, that's just seems to be like such a big part of our capitalist culture, and it's so bogus, and it's kind of nice to see a movie sort of lean into and play with that a little bit too. I thought this was brilliant. Sean Baker's brilliant. I love all of his movies. I am curious though, when you guys say that you think this is more accessible, what do you mean by that? Like, more accessible than the Florida Project?
Well, and that's the thing. I actually think Florida Project is probably even more accessible than this is, but I think that the way that this is marketed, like you say, is not really what the full movie is about, but I think that that's what's going to sell it and make it more accessible to other people. Because I fully agree. I don't think that anybody walking into this not having seen a Sean Baker movie, they're going to get a slap in the face, and they're probably going to walk away going, I just got bait and switched. Like, that is not the movie I was expecting, because that second half is not a comedy. I mean, it has some funny moments. Like, there's some funny bits peppered throughout. Like, the whole car towing scene is just fucking hilarious. It's
so funny.
It's so funny. And there's like insane. All these little tidbits that are hilarious, but that is not the tone in the movie's second half at all.
Although, like, the people who are saying this is like Pretty Woman and Uncut Gems mashed together, that's
really what I said.
How we should probably be talking about this film, so that people kind of know what we're getting into.
I say it's Pretty Woman. Pretty Woman through an Uncut Gems filter with some After Hours thrown in. And that's why I say it's a bit more accessible. And if we look at the trajectory of Sean Baker's career, he has been moving into it, because Florida Project could be more accessible, but it's also a low class disenfranchised like fairy tale from the point of view of a little girl at the same time, and then Red Rocket's moving into trying to be an accessible that you're inside the psyche of this burnt out porn star, but he's not a good dude, right? There is some goodness that we feel in Nora that we can latch on to Annie a bit and want to see her succeed. I don't want to see Simon Rex succeed in Red Rocket. You just want to see his downfall.
Yeah, that was his point, though, with Red Rocket. It was to expose these predatory assholes that work in porn and sex work, right? Like, that was that was the whole ethos behind that film. Whereas, Nora is a completely different beast, and we are supposed to sympathize with her, and she's sympathetic. So, yeah.
I still just don't know, and I can't wait to see it another time, because I still don't actually know, did she really fall in love with him? Like, that's something that I think is really an interesting other aspect to it. I'm like, I wonder if she really did feel that way for him, or if it was just, you know, the front, like this idea of.
I don't know if it matters. I don't know if it was like falling in love with him or falling in love with like what all of this would mean for her life. Either way, she's like, if that gets pulled away, you're going to grieve it regardless. Right. Like, that question is maybe less interesting to me. I don't know.
And to me, I don't think it would deter from my enjoyment of the movie, but it is still a question that I want an answer to. In my mind, I want to know, did she actually fall for him, or was this
just did he actually fall for her?
No.
Yeah.
No, I don't think he did. But then that's a discussion for another day.
When's the regular release for this one? Is November?
No, next week.
Or next week. Oh, there okay, cool.
But it's also when your relationship is entirely based on a transaction, can you fall for each other? I don't know. There's a lot going on here, I think.
Melissa, it's probably the least interesting part of the movie, but it's still, to me, an interesting part. I guess we should come back to Bill for his top
six to ten.
I'll do these quick. Number six, Saturday Night is really good.
I can't wait.
Yeah,
can't
it's wait. It's really fun. It's all real time. The acting, we know all these people. Like, we know John Belushi, we know everybody, and they're all great. The movie just is fast and it flows really nicely. I think people are really going to like that one. Number seven, The Seed of the Sacred Fig. It's 2 hours and 45 minutes, and I thought it was faster than Anora.
Wow.
Yeah. I thought it was really good. It gets a little Scooby-Doo at the end. Everybody will figure that out when they see it. it's really strong. The best Iranian film I've seen this year. Number eight, Secret Mall Apartment. The tape art made me cry. I'm not afraid to say that. It's incredible. And his underground in that like drain area, that art he did there.
Oh yeah. Also, with the mannequins and stuff.
Holy, that stuff is incredible. Number nine, Conclave. The person beside me really hated the ending. and had no problem telling me that, which is awesome, because I like a movie that pisses like a lot of people off, and that you can always tell who's religious on that film. It's a really slick piece of entertainment. It'll do well at the Oscars too. And number 10, one of, like, I think three Canadian films I liked at the festival, Universal Language, because it's really fucked up.
Matt Rankin
makes like a Kurosami film in Winnipeg, and it's just really nuts.
I'm bummed I missed out on that one.
Yeah, I really loved it. And there was like a complete full audience, and I think 10 of us were vibing with it, and we were all really vibing with it, but everybody else kind of hated it.
That's just, always fun.
Just my kind of film for that.
Yeah. Just a quick one. I just want to talk about festival audiences and how tone is sometimes not received in the right way. There's movies where Chloe and I were looking at each other being like, are we watching an Adam Sandler film?
Conclave was the worst for that.
Yeah, everyone was like the worst for that. It was a laugh riot, apparently.
Did you guys see Rumors?
Yes.
Yeah.
The crowd thought that was like the funniest movie ever made.
Yeah, I still don't understand it. Like, they were laughing in places. I'm like, this is funny?
That movie's coming out in Elevation's releasing it next week, and I already teased Chloe. I'm like, you're gonna have to talk about Rumors next week and give it some sort of review.
Good luck.
Just talk about Roy Dupuis. He's awesome.
Yeah, he's pretty great.
Yeah, Canada's prime minister. He's the highlight of the film.
Oh yeah. Like, there aren't very many highlights.
Yeah, he is the main character. Like,
the best part of it.
I also wanted to give a shout out to Emilia Perez because I think it really works, except for the music.
Problematic when you're a musical.
I know, but I thought
that's not necessarily true. To me it felt like Almodovar with less of a sensibility for trans experience, to be totally honest with you. Like the whole, like that for me, the musical segment about like when she's investigating trans surgery, I was just like, this is horrible. This should not be in the movie. This is really bad. Like, this just feels so clearly this was done by a white cis straight old man.
there were a couple of instances where that is, well, where the music, like the lyrics are just way off base, and there's just moments in that movie that are just like, what is happening here?
I'm looking forward to seeing it. I don't know when I'll get to see it.
It's certainly an experience. Like like Bill said, you know, give us something that's different and trying something, even if it doesn't fully work. I can appreciate that. I honestly don't know who this is for, because it's not really. I don't think it's a mainstream
Netflix audience, apparently.
They're not going to watch it. They're going to turn this thing on because of the cast. And 5 minutes in, they're going to turn it off because they're going to be like, what the fuck is happening here? And if they don't turn it off within 5 minutes, they're going to turn it off at that the musical section that you were just talking about, Melissa. And if not, if they manage to get past that.
If you manage to get through that, it actually gets way better, I feel like. And the performances are so good. Like, all three of those women are so good that it is like it's fully worth like sitting through the first, like, yeah, if you can make it through the first quarter, then you're golden. I feel like then it's super interesting. The film gets super interesting.
I think story-wise, I thought it was actually a really great story. And there are moments that I thought, wow, this is actually like emotionally, this is resonating. Yeah. The music just
Like pure Almodovar. Like, that's why I can't figure out like why it's an Odiard film, because the story feels like Almodovar, like 100%.
Well, I'm here for the continued rise of Selena Gomez. So I'm
okay with it.
She's good.
Oh, and one last thing. I really hated the end.
Oh, no.
I lasted an hour. That was enough.
I sat through the whole Oppenheimer.
Oh, how did you sit
through the whole thing?
Oh, my God.
Like, maybe it will get better. Like, maybe. maybe. It was a big swing. It was a big swing and a miss, but it was a big swing. And George McKay has a really lovely singing voice. I had no idea, but he's quite talented. I didn't get that out of 1917.
No singing parts in that.
While everybody else was watching the rest of that film, I was at Popeye's eating a chicken sandwich. It was good.
it was a very long 2-hour movie.
Any final thoughts before we put a pin in VIF 2024?
Well, next year is going to be 10. Year number 10 for me. I know you guys are far ahead of me on that, but this can be the sophomore year for Chloe, year two.
Yeah.
So that's pretty cool. And she'll know more of what she's getting into now this year. She'll have some of that knowledge. So I'm glad to impart that.
I feel like the hardest thing about learning to VIF is figuring out how to eat properly during the festival. It's like you end up eating a lot of Pringles, sadly.
Yeah, exactly. Or just like stopping by a convenience store. And then like making it inconvenient, like they took the 7-Eleven out of International Village. Like all places in downtown, they're like taking places away that are cheap and easy to get to. And it's just like, make it easy us on our festival going people, please.
I'm not going to lie. I ate a lot of Costco.
Yeah. No. Right in that area.
Yeah.
Cheap and easy, right?
Yeah. Hot dogs $1.50.
Yeah.
With a drink.
I hope that they keep the venues kind of the same though. Like I don't want the Park Theater to be a venue again, really. I don't really care about going to that one.
Yeah. Personally. Fifth Avenue was a bit of a pain in the ass, but it was fine once we got there.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Did they only use one screen there?
Yeah.
Yeah, Fifth Avenue was fine. I like the Park. I don't think there's too much of a difference between either of those, but it was nice. The Hollywood didn't work for me as much as I would love to support the Hollywood Theater. It's just too far out from the other theaters. I think it just made things a bit difficult, but I still tended to gravitate towards the Playhouse, the Rio, and International Village. I think I only saw one movie at Fifth Avenue.
Yeah, I didn't.
We did one at VIF Theater. We had Marco the Invented Truth, so we actually got to go sit in the new theater.
That's that's the best theater. It is just the best theater. It's the most comfortable theater. There's decent popcorn.
Yeah. So what you're saying, there is actually seats at VIF that have lumbar support.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
And leg room.
Yeah.
And they recently redid all of their sound system as they kept announcing at every performance.
Except they didn't use it. We went to see Emilia Perez there, and it was not in Atmos, I tell you. Yeah.
That's like unfortunate.
They play too many movies to like older boomers who keep telling them to turn it down. And it's like, you guys, why did you invest in the sound system if you're not going to blast it?
Listen, I'm going to use the shit out of that sound system. I tell you that.
Yeah, you should. Like, I don't want to hear people chewing popcorn. I want to hear the fucking soundtrack. Like, come on.
So next year, maybe we keep on saying this, but hopefully we'll be able to all record together at once. That would be cool.
It would have been nice to just all for all of us to see a movie together. I mean, I think I saw I didn't see Melissa at all.
No.
Just the way that it works out.
Welcome to VIF.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. Pretty much.
Always on the move.
That's right. So where can folks find you between now and our next show?
I am Bill Harris. I am at SoundJam69 on Twitter and Letterboxd. And just for the record, my 43rd film at VIF was Hans Zimmer, and it was fucking incredible.
Plug that I went to see the Alanisa Bumsoen and Jeremy Dutcher show through VIF, which was fucking phenomenal. Yeah. It's like the first time in decades that Alanisa has done like a musical performance, and her voice is killer. It's fantastic. She was brilliant. Seeing those two brilliant Indigenous artists on stage together was incredible. I feel sorry for all of you bums who missed it. And I'm at Melzy Melzy on Letterboxd.
You can find me on Letterboxd at The Marina and on Instagram at The Marina too. Chloe, where can folks find you?
You can find me on Letterboxd at Honey Bun Chloe, and I also co-host What the Hell Should I Watch with Steve.
And that's me. I am the host of What the Hell Should I Watch with Chloe, as she said. And another way to get a hold of Chloe is probably to comment on the videos. You can find them at stevestebbing.ca and our YouTube channel. Just search my name there. I'm on Twitter, Instagram, Letterboxd, and Threads at The Stevel Dead. I also do another podcast, a horror-centric one called Tremble with Kurt and Taylor. Our last episodes were on House on Haunted Hill and House of Wax. We did a Dark Castle episode, a couple episodes. And I'm also on Shane Hewitt in the Night Shift, which every Friday at 8 p.m. Eastern time on Toronto's News 1010 on the iHeartRadio network, which then is rebroadcast the following weekend over that radio station streaming. And yeah, that's it.
Awesome. And this is why Steve goes last. One other thing, 5 stars, no notes on your guys' awesome VIF videos.
Oh, thank you.
That was good. Thanks. Stuff, guys.
Really appreciate that. Yeah, I guess, Chloe, we should plug that too. We have an hour and 7 minute long video of breakdown of all our thoughts immediately after each of the screening we went to with Chloe getting drowned out at one point when we were running to the beeline from A Brief History of a Family. I don't even think you can see in that video. It's really funny, though.
And you can find notes and links to everything from this week's show at atcpod.ca. And until the next time.
Hack the planet.
Hack the planet.
Bye.